Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Most bees make honey. These killer bees make great sports insights. But they also make honey. Don't ask about the process. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Joel and Jeremy.
All right, who do the 23 Texans remind you of? Can be any sport, 713-780-ESPN. Todd, the show, and the Twitch, who's a Giants fan, he says the 2022 New York Football Giants. Todd, just leave the chat room and don't come back. Daniel Jones is not C.J. Stroud. There's no comparisons there. You're just trolling. To me, the comparison is are the Astros. I think that you can look back at the 2015 Astros and see a lot of comparisons with the 2023 Texans. I think both teams are a little bit ahead of schedule. Like the 15 Astros weren't supposed to be a playoff team in 15. They were predicted to win the World Series in 17. Same thing with the 23 Texans. Like the only very, very few predicted the Texans to be a postseason team. On the right track, trending in the right direction, all of those things, sure, but to be in the divisional round, no. So the 23 Texans, 15 Astros, both ahead of schedule. Also, They each had lousy years leading into the season. You look back at the 15 Astros, where they had 92 losses in 2014. They had 111 losses in 2013, and they had a couple other 100-loss seasons prior to that. The Houston Texans had won 11 games in the previous 3 years before 2023. So another comparison. Youth on both of the rosters. You go back and look at the 15 Astros, Carlos Correa was a rookie. Lance McCullers was a rookie. Jose Altuve was only 25 years old. George Springer was only 25 years old. What are the Texans built on? Youth with C.J. Stroud, with Will Anderson, with Christian Harris, Jalen Petrie, Derek Stingley, a very young core that you're feeding off of and winning games with. Both teams beat a team in the playoffs no one expected you to beat. Remember the Astros, wild card, one game. They beat the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the Houston Texans beat a Browns team who was favored to win. Also, the Astros went 5 games in the division series against the eventual World Series champions. You're probably a Tony Sipp, Carlos Correa screw-up. I think it's Sipp touched the ball and a ground ball up the middle that could have been a double play, would have got you out of a critical inning. You could have easily won that division series. Instead, you lost it in 5 to Kansas City. Many people think Baltimore might be the betting favorite to win the Super Bowl. So I think up and down, you look at the 23 Texans, you look at the 15 Astros, and you see a lot of similarities, at least from my point of view.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's a good one. I don't know that I'm going to be able to make that kind of a comparison, but I think that when you start thinking about, well, Cincinnati, because you had a quarterback and because they went on a run, or a Detroit team that looks like they're finally putting it together, maybe not the quarterback comparison, but the fact that there's young talent, they built through young talent, draft picks, and otherwise. The one that comes to my mind, Jeremy, is the fact that it's the first run of the Kansas City Chiefs. It wasn't Mahomes' rookie year, but if you remember, he sat for a year, and he sat behind Alex Smith, and then he took over. But to me, it was because of the fact that Mahomes was drafted later than some of the other guys that were on the quarterback list in that draft. And a lot of people had a lot of doubts coming out of Texas Tech. I know that you heard, oh, Bill O'Brien liked him and other people liked him. But did they really like him or see what we see in him now? And then all of a sudden, it's kind of like he let the world on fire and you had a young Tyreek Hill that was added to that mix and Mecole Hardman and younger guys that they were putting into the mix as well, to where you saw that once you saw the true Mahomes on display, you were like, oh, bleep, this could be a long run. And I'm not saying they're going to have the same kind of Super Bowl success, but when it starts with the quarterback comparison, CJ came out, he wasn't the number one rated quarterback in a lot of people's minds. CJ came out and everybody's like, he's got to prove this, he's got to prove that. Now that he's proven himself and it's all on display and people are seeing it, and you think about Tank and you think about Nico and you think about, you know, all the Will Anderson and the guys, the young guys that are coming with it too, it's easy to say this is the makings of a team that can go on quite a run of success.
Yeah. Interesting, too, the Chiefs, you know, they didn't even play Mahomes' rookie year.
Like right. Said, so I said, yeah, Alex Smith.
Behind Alex Smith, whereas Stroud's kind of put it on display year one. The one comparison that, I mean, I don't want to bring up the 23 Texans and the 15 Astros, we kind of forget that the 16 Astros missed the playoffs. Like, we forget that the 16 Astros missed the playoffs whenever when, now they had the expectations of winning the division. They had the expectations of getting back there. They didn't, but then they responded by winning the World Series in 17. So, and we know that the Texans next year have to play a first-place schedule. Like, we've seen the schedule. It looks very difficult. Mm-hmm. Would you take a Texans missing the playoffs in 24 if it meant winning a Super Bowl in 25?
Oh, yeah.
I think everybody
it's
would,
a no-brainer.
Right? It's a no-brainer. What's your comp here, Joe George?
All right, I'm going to go back to 2007. There was this basketball team that had a below 500 record. They took a rookie with the number one pick. That next year, that rookie won Rookie of the Year. Took the Boston Celtics to seven games in the first round of the playoffs. I'm going Derrick Rose, Chicago Bulls, C.J. Stroud. I think, like, now obviously, thoughts and prayers to C.J.'s knees that they don't end up like Derrick's. But, like, when Derrick in that Bulls team played against the Celtics, there was a belief that Derrick would eventually win the MVP like he did, that this team was going to be very, very good. They were the number one seed, I think, the following year after that. So that's the one I went with.
You know the what always makes me think about with that, though, Joe, was because it was the Celtics and because everybody – it was an eye-opener – everybody immediately started comparing Derrick Rose to Michael when Michael went off against the Celtics that year. And it's like, okay, let's slow our roll a little bit. I don't think there's ever going to be another one like MJ. But Derrick Rose put his name on the map real quick. So I think from that perspective, absolutely, Derrick Rose then became an MVP. So it's a good one.
I think Joe's is the worst one. What do you mean it's a good one? It's the worst one.
Why?
Because it's the worst result.
Well, yeah.
It's the worst result. Give me 15 Astros because that means you're going to win a couple of titles. Give me Blankers Chiefs. Like, you have like a little mini dynasty going. Give me the Bulls. They never even made the title. They never made the finals with Rose.
But that's not the question. The question was the current team.
No, I understand. Like, the comparison can be fine.
Well, I think it's not just the current team
because it's like the building of something coming up.
Well, I preface mine by saying I don't think that I'm not going to put it on the Texans that they're going to win as many Super Bowls as the Chiefs.
Sure.
But I think that, look, they're going to have a long success of winning. I think that Derrick Rose was a guy that came onto the scene and people had questions. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, he is the unequivocal leader and he has a boatload of talent. He's going to be heard from for a while.
No, I get that. But I'm talking about the end result.
You don't like the end result.
No, I would not be happy with a Derrick Rose end result.
No, of course not.
Wouldn't that feel bad?
Oh, for sure.
That would be a disappointment.
Yeah,
it'd be a failure.
C.J. Stroud would win the MVP next year, and then his knees would break. That's not good.
And then the team would be a disaster.
Yeah,
and
so you're jinxing them?
They would be booing, let's see, they would be booing, let's, I don't know, like a former general manager that's died. They're going to bring Charlie Casserly's wife to honor her before a game, and they're going to boo that. They're going to boo her. Well, Rick Smith's wife is
Well, not
dead,
wife. I'm not so. Saying they're going to boo the wife. I'm just saying they would boo Rick Smith. He could be there.
I shouldn't be laughing at that.
I know the end result's bad, but I was thinking about the current product.
No, I don't like Joe's. I don't like Joe's. I just don't like the way that one ends because it means that Stroud's gonna he's never gonna quite reach the potential that we all expect him to reach with team success.
I was thinking immediate.
No, I get it. I think it's a good comp. I just don't like the result.
I'm living by my resolution. So
what's your resolution?
I'm not gonna be Mr. Meany to Joe every day anymore.
Well, that's boring.
I don't know why you feel like that's the case, but
you've told me that.
No, it's not.
You've told me every day. You said every day.
No,
you
it's
do
not.
That to me. Okay, fine. Well, I made
I
the
never
resolution.
Said stop
I'm
that.
With.
I never said stop. Giving
you
me
didn't
a
say
hard
stop
time.
It, but you said I do it every day.
Because you do.
So then I stopped doing it.
It doesn't bother me.
Okay, obviously.
It bothers me that we had an off-the-air conversation that you continue to bring up on the air.
No, you said it on the air. You said multiple times on the air that I picked on you every day.
You guys give me a hard time. That's all I said.
Okay, well, I changed it.
I mean,
I
like,
pick on you both all the time.
Yes, you
I don't
do.
Care.
You absolutely do.
Like, I don't care. It's fine.
Sometimes I do, but I get over it.
Joe, I'm never going to stop picking
Please
on you.
Please don't ever stop.
Blankers, I'm never going to stop picking
I
on
understand
you.
That. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't think you should stop picking on Joe. It's restriction. And you're cheating our listeners, which is what you're doing.
Okay.
You're cheating our listeners. Chris and Humble says Derrick Rose, 3? That's the worst comp to jinx him. Get out of here with that. your comp's not taking a not,
how
it's
long
not a
was the run of
success.
Derrick Rose though? He had the, I mean, look, he had the MVP. He was a multiple time All-Star. He got his own shoe from Adidas and the big time marketing deals. He was all over commercials too. That overall run by D. Rose was pretty long, wasn't it?
Right, but what was the furthest they got?
I understand they didn't win it. But, I mean, sometimes you got to understand the competition,
title, Joe?
Too.
I think so.
Yeah, one conference title. I don't want that.
Okay.
I want two championships.
But we just got done saying what a gauntlet the AFC is.
Sure, but, I mean, this is our chance to dream. This is our chance to talk high. Like, I mean, you know, talking about the 15 Astros means that you're going to go on this little mini dynastic run. Same thing with Kansas City. We're getting stuck to, you know, playoff purgatory being Derrick Rose.
Who was the biggest competition for the Bulls then that they couldn't get over the hump?
Boston?
Probably Boston, right?
Okay.
They only went to one conference finals. The rest was – after that conference finals, they went first round exit, conference semifinal exit, first round exit, conference semifinal exit. That sounds like the Bill O'Brien Texans.
Well, okay. Yeah, I think Chicagoans would still say they had a fun run knowing that D. Rose was going to take them to the playoffs every
would
year.
Would Houston sign up for that?
No, because they've already lived it. They've already lived it.
Yeah. And then since Rose has been gone, it's been disastrous.
That's
right?
When you start talking about we're AFC champs, Brian, or AFC South champs, Brian, and hanging banners for divisions.
This guy says the 92 Oilers.
92 who?
The 92 Oilers. He's obviously trolling because that's the year they lost to the Bills. But that's Tennessee's thing. That's the Titans thing. That history belongs to Tennessee. It does not belong to Houston. And it's also a terrible comparison because the Oilers had made the playoffs. That was the sixth year in a row that they made the playoffs. This is the first year of the last four. So I appreciate the troll, but it's not a good troll. Also, that stuff belongs to Tennessee. And also, John McClain couldn't stop tweeting about that on Saturday.
Yeah, sure, that's right.
He was bringing
exactly
up the
right.
Buffalo Bills every chance he got.
He really did. And he caught the ire of a boatload of people, too, that were just like, are you serious? And there's more than one, and he kept doing it. And it was just like, what are you trying to do, McClain?
713-780-ESPN. What's the comp to the 2023 Texans? Don't come at me with Derrick Rose stuff. 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, deep inside the secret bee cave, it's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Who do the 2023 Texans remind you of? Can be a cross-sport reference. Like these geniuses on the text line right now, 9780, my comp for the 23 Texans is the 15 Astros. What a guy. You're so smart. That is a great one. 0703, 2015 Astros. Just when I thought it couldn't get any better. Just when I thought there weren't any more geniuses out there. Absolutely right. Here's 8143. 1980 San Francisco 49ers, new quarterback and head coach, and it started a dynasty. Now, Bill Walsh was in his second season, but I get where you're going here. Montana, you know, I think he was actually drafted.
Was that
the
Dwight
he was drafted
Clark
in 80.
Catch?
I think that was 81, actually, because 1980 they didn't make the playoffs.
Okay.
But they had Montana in-house because Montana won the Super Bowl his first year. It looks like as a starter, but he was in his second year. He wasn't a rookie. Now, if they're the 49ers – like, that would be something. Because you won a Super Bowl in 81. You won a Super Bowl in 84. Then you went back-to-back in 88, 89. You won another one in 94. And then you had runs all throughout the way as well. Never lost a Super Bowl, which is kind of shocking, right? Like, they won all these Super Bowls, never got to a Super Bowl and lost it. That's pretty impressive. They were 5-0 in Super Bowls. But, yeah, if DeMeco is Bill Walsh and C.J. Stroud is Joe Montana slash Steve Young on that last one, that would be neat. That would be really cool.
Yeah, and Tank Dell becomes Jerry Rice.
Maybe Nico becomes
Jerry
Rice.
How about that? That would be fair. I don't care if one of them becomes Jerry Rice.
Who was the – was it Taylor who was the second
John
receiver?
John Taylor, yep, 82.
He was just like a burner, right? Like he would kill people on those deep routes. 5493 says the 23 Texas Rangers. I hope that's not the – well, I hope it's the case short-term because you win a title, but I hope it's not the case long-term because they're going to fall on their face and never be any good again.
Yeah, they're starting off a little bit behind next year too with injuries. So we'll see.
1403 says the 06 Saints. You had your first year Sean Payton, first year Breeze. You drafted Bush and Colston. I remember when Colston was listed as a tight end in fantasy football. It was like a cheat code. I would take Saints, though, just off the top of my head.
And again, you win one, so that's great. And you had some really good years and some really good teams. The one that I asked Joe in the break, if anybody will mention, was the Patriots, because you would say the Brady run Patriots, like you have the ex quarterbacks, like it, Watson becomes Drew Bledsoe, and then all of a sudden CJ takes over and is the next quarterback, like Brady takes over for Bledsoe, and then all of a sudden you just go on a run. And again, I don't know that they're going to put dynasty up on it and do all those kind of things, but when you start talking about the young Gronks and some of the young players they pieced in with veterans, and then more veterans wanted to play for them, I was curious if anybody would bring that up.
Yeah. I mean, if you're bringing up the 49ers in the 80s, why not bring up the Patriots too? How many Super Bowls do you need out of Stroud? Like, now, since we're having a silly conversation, let's get really silly. Like, how many do you need from Stroud? If we're having like this chat, he's going to be one of the best, all of this. How many do you need from his career?
In terms of like all-time greatness or just to like...
How many titles?
I'm saying, but do you need this to solidify his greatness like in the history of the league?
How many titles do you need from Stroud? Like you think we think Stroud's good. How many titles would you feel good with?
Being a Texan, I would feel great if there were... I would feel good if there were two. I'd feel great if there were three.
Like if you just got one, is that good enough? Like, because I think everybody's super bullish on CJ Stroud right now.
Yes, of course it's good enough because this is
super bullish.
Football crazy, Texas and Houston, and they've never had a football Super Bowl champion in this city. Yes, one is good enough, and everybody would be ecstatic. But when you start talking about like in order to solidify your place in Canton and do all these things, now it's a two Super Bowls are like when there's a no doubt about it. And so anything two plus, and then you're talking about greats of all time.
I think it depends on when you get them. Like if he were to get one next year and then you said one, I think it would feel like you left meat on the bone. But if you get it like in his eighth year, I think it's, oh, okay, great. Like he's the one. He's the one that pushes over the top, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I'm curious about that. 713-780-3776.
I think almost everybody leaves meat on the bone, right? I think that when you talk –
I don't think Brady did.
I think I lived through two guys that did. Favre did the year after they won the first one. They said 9 times out of 10 they'd have beaten the Broncos. Well, it was the 10th time. They didn't do it. If you look at how many times,
see, I disagree with Favre. I think he was completely overrated. So I think one for him was about right.
I don't, and obviously there's a little bit more than just my head in that one. But I saw him play enough that I thought they had a couple of teams like the year that they lost to Dallas in the NFC Championship game when they had Reggie White and Favre. That was a team capable of winning another one. When Rodgers lost all those NFC Championship games, I felt like there was meat left on the bone. When Montana, that's an unbelievable stat. Like Brady is as great as they were, and as he's the greatest of all time. The fact that they left a couple short is kind of crazy when you think about the fact that what Montana was 6-for-6.
I think Montana won
three?
Five, right? Oh. Montana won four.
Okay, four.
And then Steve Young won the final one.
Oh, that's
fifth.
Right. Okay.
So I don't think Montana left any on the bone. I don't think Brady left any on the bone. I don't think Trent Dilfer left any on the bone.
You don't think that Brady didn't leave the one on the bone, that they should have beat the Giants?
Not really, because what was their record in Super Bowls?
They were undefeated in that game. They were steamrolling
sure,
the league.
Yeah, sure.
And then well, you take a helmet catch. No, I know.
Right, but you're also down 28-3 against Atlanta. Like, you shouldn't have won that one. Tom Brady was 7-3 in Super Bowls. Like, that's a 70% winning percentage Super Bowls. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
Like, that to me is not meat on the bone. Like, I don't think Eli Manning left meat on the bone. He got everything out of his talent, like winning two.
Right.
So I bet you there's more that didn't. Because, like, all of these scrub quarterbacks that, like, won a Super Bowl too, like I mentioned Trent Dilfer. Like, Trent Dilfer shouldn't have any.
Brad Johnson.
And he got one.
Joe Flacco.
Yeah, you don't see – yeah. Yeah, Flacco didn't leave any on the bone. I would say Flacco, one for Flacco was good. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. This one says OKC's Paul, Harden, and Westbrook.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that out.
I think he means Durant.
Yeah, it had to be KD.
He's got to mean the original Oklahoma City.
Because Serge Ibaka, too. That was a loaded
Perkins.
Team. Yeah, and Perk, right. That was a loaded, loaded team that looked like it was going to go on a run for quite a while.
I wish we would have seen that play out with their big three. Like, I wonder what that would have looked like if they didn't break up those big three. Like, maybe you have to trade Ibaka. Maybe you can't pay Perkins. You would have to.
If you're a Rockets
but
fan,
you keep those three.
I would be interested how they answered that because they never won one, but they don't have a run without James Harden in that trade.
Yeah, I think that you would. I think that in revisionist history, you're okay with it.
I think in revisionist history, you keep Harden and you move Ibaka.
Well, for the OKC. No doubt. Like, yeah, you move Ibaka, you move Perkins, you keep those three together. But from a Rockets point of view, I don't think that you take back the Harden trade.
You love
it. You got Harden pretty cheap. Go look back at that trade. You didn't really trade anything for Harden.
Yeah.
He won an MVP. He got you to the conference finals. He went pretty far.
He made you relevant again.
Yeah, and you were a team that was stuck in, you were the eighth seed. You're going 41-41 every year. So, yeah, I don't think you can take back the Harden trade if you're in Houston. And this is coming from a Harden hater. I'm not a Harden guy. And
I'm not either.
I wouldn't take back the trade.
No, I'm with you because you were thinking about – think about when you really want to just kind of entertain how good the Harden run was, even if you're a Harden hater. Think about the trade that the commissioner vetoed and what kind of hell you would have been in. And not only would you not have the run with Harden of at least a one player that was winning MVP, scoring 50 a night, and putting you back on the map, you'd have had Pau Gasol as your build-around guy and given up a whole lot more and would have sucked for a long time.
Alex says UNLV, the run in Rebels. I don't see that one.
Was that
I don't know
the 2-year run? They won there. One that had Larry Johnson and all those guys.
Yeah, they had Kenny Anderson. That documentary.
Anderson Hunt.
I think it was on HBO.
Stacey Augman. Anderson.
Stacey
Hunt.
Augman.
Did you hear that? So I worked with a guy that worked with that team, and they said that Greg Anthony was the guy that gave back his scholarship because he was such a savvy businessman that. He not only had a real estate license and was doing all these things, but the year before that team went on the run, he created this merchandising a deal for them with commemorative coins and T-shirts and things. And because of it, because he was the mastermind behind all of it, at the start of the year, the starting five agreed that he would get a little bit more because he did all that. And right before the Duke game, Stacey Augman basically confronted him and said, "You don't deserve more and you need to give it back and whatever." And Anthony basically told him to go fly a kite. And he challenged Anthony, and Anthony punched him out before the game. And if you look at that game, Stacey Augman was a non-factor the entire game. And he's like, "We'd have won back-to-back. We'd have been on a run. We might not have lost
the
game."
I think that they won in year two. Because I think the first year they got beat by
– whichever year they lost, it was because – he said because right before the game that there was a punch-out in the locker room because of merchandise and money about it.
I think it was the second year because they hammered – Duke. They beat them by 30, and it was a huge shock to everyone. No, you're right. It was they won the first year, and then they lost in the semifinal the next year. I got them flipped.
I think it was before the semifinal games. I think
year two.
He said I think that's when the punch out happened.
Okay. Yeah, I was I thought they lost in the final four and then won that second year, but it was actually the other way around. Yeah, that was a fun team. Tark sued the NCAA for harassment and won. And won the case against the NCAA.
What kind of harassment?
They were just
because of recruiting
stuff. Yeah, he won his case against the NCAA over. It was crazy. 50-10 on the Derrick Rose thing. He says so. Deshaun Watson was Derrick Rose. Great call. That's a great call. That's the comparison we're looking for. 0783 says, "How about a rookie Tiger Woods?" Oh, man,
so it involved knees in all three in both cases.
you guys are out there. 7109, San Francisco lost to Baltimore in a Super Bowl 5-1 record. We were talking about the Montana Young Niners, but you're right. Technically, you're right. We were talking about the ones where Montana and Young during that little dynastic run. All right, 713-780-ESPN. How would you power rank the three major pro Houston sports coach managers right now? You got Ime. You got D'Amico, you got Joe Espada, who holds a wine glass in a way that I've never seen a wine glass held, but apparently it's the proper way to do it. How would you rank those three Houston Pro Sports Big Three manager coaches right now that we have in this city? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. I'm often asked, how would you rank General Ben? You know the answer to that. It's the best. Great pleasure of mine to tell you about General Ben. At the top of that list is because I believe what I say. Gentle Ben is the best. The vodka, best in the state. Gin, best in the market. The bourbon, the double platinum winner at the prestigious Ascot Awards. General Ben uses their innovative, revolutionary technology that eliminates impurities for the cleanest, smoothest spirits you'll ever taste. It's clean. It eliminates the burn. Don't labor through your drink. Enjoy it. Savor it. You can do that with Gentle Ben. You'll love what's not in Gentle Ben, including gluten. Gentle Ben isn't going to brag about that one, though, like some people will. All spirits are naturally gluten-free. You can find Gentle Ben inside the Toyota Center. Stop by Ben's Bar on the way to your seat. Head to the tasting room in Alvin. Stop at your liquor store on the way home. Total Wine, Specs, many of the local stores. Pick up a bottle today. Ask for it at the bar. Ask for it at your restaurant, whichever one you're going to tonight as well. And then head to GentleBen.com. You can learn more about their incredible story, and you can just order straight from the website now. You can order the vodka, the gin, the bourbon right at Gentle RationalBin.com makes it easy. Have it delivered straight to your doorstep. It's crafted in Texas by Ricky Ford, A&M grad. Cheers to a new year filled with better choices.
Time to get back to sports school with the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5.
He's Blank. I am Branham. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. So three majors, pro sport teams in this city. You got the Astros, you got the Rockets, you got the Texans. Feel pretty good about all three. Probably as good as you felt about all three in quite some time. Texans are in the playoffs, rookie coach, rookie quarterback. Rockets took a little lump on this East Coast trip, but, you know, first-year coach, young team that's moving in the right direction, and the Astros, you know, still going to be a competitive team, right? We hope that's the case. Of those three coaches, managers here, you got Ime Udoka, you got D'Amico Ryans, you got Joe Espada. You're asked to power rank the three of those. How are you doing it? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Blankers, what would your order be for those three?
One and two is tough for me. I go back and forth between, like, a resume and then just, like, the raw emotions and what we just got done talking about. Like, how long of a run can you go on with D'Amico and the Texans? Because, like, at first blush, the quick answer to me is D'Amico, Udoka, and Espada. And when you look, when you start doing a little deeper dive, you got to remember, like, Udoka already went to a finals. Like, he had success in his first year head coaching with the Celtics. But I think that overall, you also factor in just on the field, off the field, everything with D'Amico, the fact that it looks like it's set up. You got your guy at quarterback. I would say right now it's D'Amico 1, Udoka 2, and Espada 3.
Okay, I have to go D'Amico at number 1. And I do agree that it's close, but I do have to reward the winning part of it. And I think D'Amico's really good at a couple of things. I think he's really good at building a culture, and I think he's a good defensive play caller. Not perfect because I think his roster is not right, but whenever he had a really good roster in San Francisco, they were number one in defense in the NFL. But also it's the culture stuff. Like it's and Ime has these same qualities. I think Ime's really good at it too. But you can see the buy-in of this team. I think it's a big reason why they went from as few wins as they had last year to winning a division title this year is because of the buy-in. Now, C.J. Stroud's a huge part of that too. But he gets the most out of his players. I was reading the DJ Bieniemy article from last week, and he had quotes from Brevin Jordan, and he said that, you know, there was this one game in particular earlier this season where Brevin Jordan ran the wrong route and was just, you know, upset with himself, came off the field, madder than a hornet, just ticked off. And D'Amico's like, hey, you keep your head in the game, we're going to need you, and then went right back to him the very next time that he was on the field. And, like, you know, little stuff like that, it's like, eh, whatever, big deal. But Jordan talks about how much that means to players because it gets the buy-in. It gives you confidence in yourself because the coaches have confidence in you. And I think Ime does the same thing too, but just hasn't had the winning yet that D'Amico has had. So I give D'Amico the slight edge with Ime. And I do think that you're right, that it's very tight because Ime, I trust Ime as well.
Well, I think they're both culture guys.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, I think that the one thing is, yeah, Udoka's won, but he didn't win here. And what D'Amico's doing is winning here, and that's what the only thing that matters to the fans in this city. And the fact that in year one, look, they both had big holes to climb out of, but the fact that it probably was a little deeper because I don't think we give enough credit to Udoka for the fact that he's going to eclipse the win total of last year. He's almost there at this point in the season, and that was something that is a massive win. But when you look at it and say, well, but the massive win is the fact that D'Amico not only won, he won the division, now he won a playoff game, now he's sitting going up against the one seed in the Final Four of the AFC. And also, they both build culture. D'Amico's also off the floor, not going to do anything like what's following Udoka that will follow him his whole career.
Yeah, and then third for me is Espada, just because we don't know who he is. Like, I think that I think Espada is going to be a good manager. I think that he has the traits. I think that we've seen enough from him, like in the right-hand man, the bench coach role, but we really have no idea what he's going to be like. We have no idea what his tendencies are, other than like that change in, what was it, with the ejection happened in Game 5 of the ALCS, which might not even have been Joe Espada. Like, it could have been Dusty Baker sending messages up the dugout, up the tunnel, that was making that call. Maybe it was Joe Espada, who knows? But we have no idea about his tendencies. We have no idea what he's going to be as, like, a manager in the clubhouse that can bring the most out of his players. I also would argue that a Major League Baseball manager probably has, like, the least impact on a single game. Certainly not as much as basketball. Certainly not as much as football.
True. Yeah.
I think that a manager, his best thing, his best attribute a manager can be is like what he does in the clubhouse and bring out morale from the team. And I think that was Dusty's strength, was his ability to do that. I know he got criticized for his game management, but Dusty was a great manager because of how he handled a clubhouse. How was that going to look for Joe Espada? You know, I have no idea. I couldn't tell you. We're totally guessing whenever we're trying to talk up the prowess and the success that Espada is going to have or is not going to have. So because he's literally never managed a single game, I can't have Espada above D'Amico and Ime, who I think are both good coaches. Now, if Steven Silas was here instead of Ime, I would have Espada just because he's a zero and not a negative over Silas. But D'Amico and Ime are not that.
So where do you then put it if it was Dusty, not Espada?
Because
Dusty got you a World Series. He dug you out of a hole.
I think I still have him third.
Really?
Yeah.
I think because of the win and because of the way he went about it and because they got to another one, I think Dusty's probably ahead of Udoka just simply because of the fact that at a time when you didn't know if they were going to be able to keep this run going and where this team was headed and this organization headed coming out of the scandal, the fact that they got to multiples and won another one, I think Dusty would be too.
Yeah, see, it's resume prowess thing. You know, like, it's interesting because you had Ime 1 based, well, I mean, the resume, his is winning beforehand. So, like, he kind of still has the resume. Oh, you had D'Amico 1?
Yeah, I had D'Amico 1, and I said it's close, but I had D'Amico 1 and Ime 2.
So, we have the same exact one.
Yeah, for now.
7-7-1-6, come on, guys, it's Ryan's. Joe, any different than our 1-2-3 that we have?
No, I don't know how you have a different answer than that. I mean, maybe, like, the only thing we have with Espada is one managerial decision in the playoffs when Dusty got thrown out that worked out really well for him. But besides that, we have nothing to go on with Joe Espada, so he has to be third. Yeah.
But then, and you also agree there's no way you could consider Udoka over, even though he's been to a finals.
No.
I think you could argue that.
No, you can't.
I think you can.
There is an argument.
Yeah, I think it's like I said, I think it's total resume versus Houston resume. And Houston resume is what everybody's going to focus and be dialed in on because we're in the middle of it. It's not over, and it's year one, and that's amazing. But I said, when you're already going to eclipse last year's win total and you're not even halfway through the season or wherever the Rockets are, it's worth noting that's pretty monumental too.
The only thing about the Boston stuff is the biggest thing he accomplished was he got Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown to play defense collectively, really for the first time. And that team is so much more talented just on paper than what the Rockets are. It's that balance of how much credit does Udoka get versus what he already had on his roster, I think, in Boston. So I would still probably lean D'Amico over Udoka, but it's a tight race.
So I think we all agree. We got the same three. Now, what, Joe, would your list change if you put Dusty in and took a spot out?
No, because we don't ask what's wrong with Ime Udoka's lineup or what's wrong with D'Amico Ryan's lineup.
We're going to be doing that with a Espada, though.
I know, but Dusty started it for a reason.
Yeah. What is wrong with – is it? What sounds better? What's wrong with Joe's lineup or what's wrong with Espada's lineup?
Well, I mean, if you ask what's wrong with Joe's lineup, I know what a lot of the responses are.
Yeah, people
are
going to think that Joe George is picking the lineup.
Connor and Beard are going to get crushed.
That might be the fun part of it, though. I don't shy away from a little controversy.
Maybe, or me.
Maybe our pre-show tweets should have Joe's lineup for the day and then compare.
7-4-5-3, Ben Olsen, fourth. We said the three majors, but yeah, Ben Olsen, fourth.
Dynamo.
Yeah. Got to see if he can repeat the success, not just flash in the pan. Now, he has had success in his previous spot. In the MLS.
DC?
I think that's right, DC United. Yeah. I have to double-check that, but I do think that is right.
No, Jeremy, I have a question for you.
For whatever we had him on.
Jeremy, you speak very glowingly about D'Amico Ryans. You love D'Amico Ryans, correct?
I do.
So what happens when I put Kelvin Sampson in?
I was just thinking that, too.
No doubt about it. I don't blame
it at all. I was just curious.
Yeah, Kelvin's one.
So D'Amico, too.
Yeah, I think Kelvin Sampson would win the AFC South.
Okay.
I do.
I know you do, and you should. You rightfully should.
I believe that. I believe in culture stuff, though. That's why I like about D'Amico, because I do think that the culture's there. Like, look how, like, I know that. Well, they're professional athletes. They play hard. All this stuff. Go look at how the Eagles played yesterday, and then go look how the Colts played against the Browns. Like, look at the Eagles just kind of, you know, missing tackles and not giving effort and kind of lollygagging around the field. A lot of that game. And then go watch the Houston Texans and how they blocked an interception. That's culture stuff. That's like guys wanting to play for you. Like, the swarm stuff is like cute and ha-ha-ha, like a cliche. But then getting people to believe that and then actually do that, I think, is the art of coaching. Like, we put way too much stock in like offensive, like these offensive coordinators and these defensive coordinators. Well, you know, he had the top-ranked defense. He had the top-ranked offense. He's going to be a great head coach. I would be looking for the leaders. I would be looking for guys who can come in and change culture, like D'Amico. I would be looking for the guys who every single person in that office, every single person on that practice field wants to be there, wants to play for that guy, and would run through a wall for that guy. Because it's cute to have, like, the top-ranked offensive mind. Like, you know, look, I mean, Josh McDaniels, and I'm not sure, ever had the top-ranked offense in the NFL. But look at him as a head coach. He's lousy, and we see it year in, year out, that these top offensive minds, defensive minds, they have zero leadership, you know, capability. Look at Brandon Staley with the Chargers. Look at these guys that get fired. They have zero leadership skills, and they get to these jobs and get fired within 2 to 3 years. Why? Because they don't have leadership skills. Go find a leader. Go find a leader. Go find a guy that's going to make your team run through a wall. D'Amico Ryans does that. I think Ime Udoka does that.
They do.
Can Joe Espada? We'll see.
But also, from the standpoint on just D'Amico alone, just look at a coach that runs down the sideline, you know, following a pick six until they get to the end zone and almost beats the guy to the end zone. Go look at the guy that shows you the raw emotion that down the sideline when you know the game's over and you got the game. And then go look at the guy that, like you were mentioning, but you saw it right before your eyes. A guy makes a bad play happens. D'Amico's patting him on the helmet and basically he's telling him, similar to what the story you brought up. But he's also, when the defense makes stops or the offense makes plays, he's the first guy out there to make sure that he is telling his team that they did a hell of a job. And that's what drives a lot of players.
But that, it's beyond that. It's beyond that, though.
Oh, because, I know it is, but I'm just saying, you don't see Belichick doing that. You don't see
I disagree.
I don't see Belichick running up and down the sidelines.
No, he's not running up and down the sidelines, but is he patting a guy on the behind when he walks over to the sideline? Yeah, probably. But so is Nick Sirianni. Like, that stuff's cute. That's like the surface level stuff.
It is.
It's whenever you give either reinforcement. It could be positive. It could be negative. It doesn't matter if the reinforcement's positive or negative. It depends on if the message resonates.
Yeah, I don't see
D'Amico's
Belichick.
Message resonates. Bill Belichick's message resonates.
It does.
D'Amico Ryan's, his message resonates. Ime Udoka, his message resonates. Does Nick Sirianni's? Absolutely not.
No, I agree with that. But what I'm saying is, on Belichick, Belichick's the kind of guy that kind of turns the other way when the negatives happen. But you know, I'm sure there are times when he gives out, you know, some credit during the sidelines. But guys will tell you it was excruciatingly hard to play for a Belichick because it's a constant grind and you really don't get that positive affirmation. When you get those kind of things from D'Amico, on top of the fact that he changed the culture, that when you have the meetings and the stuff we don't see, and on top of that, the locker room discussions we do see, it's real easy to figure out why guys want to play for him and guys love being on this team.
Yeah, see, to me, you don't need that, though. There's more than one way to cook an egg, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think you can do it with positive reinforcement. I think you can do it with zero positive reinforcement. You just have to figure out a way as a coach to get that message to resonate and then get the return from the player as you try to pull the most out of them as you possibly can. And there's more than one way to cook that egg. I've been impressed with how D'Amico does it, and I've been really impressed with how Ime Udoka does it. I hope that Joe Espada can do it as well. 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Car Wreck of the Day, presented by CarWreckTexas.com. What are you nominating for today's Car Wreck of the Day? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, another word for Daisy Dips. Look, we've got big games coming up on the horizon this weekend. You still have time. The weather's going to be great starting Thursday and Friday. Get out to your local local grocery store, get you some Daisy Dips. If you're having people over to the house to watch some games this weekend, you are going to be a champion no matter who wins the actual games themselves, because people are going to say you're winning by serving Daisy Dips, whether you use it for wings or pizza or the vegetable dips, or you're using it for your favorite chips. Daisy Dips are a game changer because people love the way they taste. They have a taste that's unique and always perfect on no matter what you put it on. And it's going to be fantastic and a great add to whatever kind of spread you're laying out before and during the games. People absolutely love it. And now you don't have to sit there in your kitchen and try and put the right recipe together and kind of mix up the sour cream with the spices and the soup mix. It's all done for you. Just go to your grocery store, ask where they have the Daisy Dips. Go get you some French onion and some ranch, and you're going to find out that it is a massive hit at any party, but especially a viewing party. Check them out today. Go to your grocery store and get you some Daisy Dips.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Let me see. I'll give you a f***ing bone, you prick. Where's my f***ing money?
This is the Car Wreck of the Day, brought to you by CarWreckTexas.com.
He's Blank. I'm Bradham. Car Wreck of the Day, presented by CarWreckTexas.com. Get your nominees in, 713-780-3776. Blankers, what you got? What are you nominating for our car wreck of the day?
Isn't it? I mean, what we witnessed last night from a team that started the season 10-1, it's the Philadelphia Eagles, and it's your favorite head coach, Nick Sirianni. It's everybody involved in the Eagles. I think that you could start with Nick Sirianni. You can blame and point fingers at a lot of people because of the fact that this was just such an embarrassment. I think this is the first time in the history of the NFL that a team started 10-1 and didn't win the division. Got to double digits and didn't win the division. But you look at this and say, whether they change their head coach or not, what a complete and total embarrassment. You changed defensive coordinators three quarters of the way through the year. You kept grasping at straws, trying to find a solution for a team that had won 10 of its first 11 and lost 6 of its last 7 and then got embarrassed on the road by Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers. That's a car wreck. That's
been
a car wreck.
How did he not fire him? How is he already not fired?
The only thing he's got in his back pocket, Jeremy, is he was in the Super Bowl last year.
So what?
And he lost both coordinators, so I don't know if that's a Howie Roseman and him and who got to decide and how the approval went on the coordinators. But swing and miss on the coordinators is one thing, but the fact of the matter is if he got you a Super Bowl a year ago, it's hard to get rid of it.
Yeah, see, I disagree with that. I never subscribe to the logic of what you've done in the past. Like, I couldn't care less what you've done in the past. I care about what I expect you to do in the future. And if I'm the Eagles ownership, well, who gives me a better chance to win next year? The jabroni, Nick Sirianni, Bill Belichick, who's arguably the greatest coach of all time, or Mike Vrabel? Sirianni's not even in the conversation with those three, even though he went to a Super Bowl last year. If I'm trying to win a Super Bowl next year, which I care way more about than winning a Super Bowl last year, going to a Super Bowl last year, I have a better chance with Belichick. I have a better chance with Vrabel. I have a better chance with Ben Johnson. I have a better chance with Bobby Slowick. If Nick Sirianni was in this coaching pool, he'd be 10th.
There's no doubt. And like I'm saying, I'm just trying to tell you, when you said, is there any reason why, or when you asked the question, I think the reason why he wouldn't be fired would be because he was in the Super Bowl a year ago. But I think it's absolutely justified to fire him because I think it's what we talked about earlier. The fact is, if this was a tooth and nail game that went down to the wire and they ended up losing a hard-fought battle, you'd go, okay, well, you know what? They really played their tails off in that game. But the fact that the body language said that they quit like midway through the second quarter tells you everything you need to know about the fact that he's lost the locker room.
Yeah, I would have fired him at the FBO. He might not have made the plane trip back to me. I would not employ that jabroni. And that jabroni doesn't have a better chance to have success next year with the Eagles than any of these coaching candidates that are out there. Another coach that I'm going to nominate is Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin's a really good coach. We know that he's never had a losing record in his coaching career. If you get asked that next year is the final year of your contract, like, why are you walking out of that mid-question? Like, you got to sit there and answer that. So he gets nominated, but so does the Pittsburgh Steeler PR. Because I wanted to go back and watch the context of that. Like, I was wondering if Tomlin was just getting peppered with those questions and
question.
He got fed up. It wasn't the first question.
Well, I was,
ESPN, it was not the first question that he was asked at that press conference.
When I saw it this morning on Get Up, they
did
said
you watch the whole press conference or just the clip?
No, I'm just saying what ESPN said. It said that was their reporter and that was the first question he was asked.
That might have been the first question she asked, but okay. He was asked questions about the game. So I was wondering if he was been if he had been peppered with a bunch of different questions that were the very like similar to that, and he got fed up with it. Because at that point, like, still don't really think that's a good thing to do, but at least I can understand it more. Mm-hmm. He was asked, you know, random NFL questions, and then the Pittsburgh Steelers media department, they cut that from what they posted on their website and what they posted on their YouTube. Mm. They did not include that in what they posted. So that also gets nominated for the car wreck of the day, that you didn't include that. Everybody's talking about that. Everybody's posting it, and you're just going to chop it off of what you posted on your website and on your YouTube channel? That's Bush League. That gets nominated for car wreck of the day, too.
Yeah, that's a bit shady.
Like, I mean, everybody knows it happened, and now it looks worse that you're cutting it off.
Well, we've also talked about the fact that when you get a guy that's in the final year of his deal, or when, or like in the Harbaugh situation, the way Harbaugh didn't want to answer it after the national championship game, reporters are doing their job. Everybody wants to know. They're going to ask it. Even if you, even if your PR department says don't ask it, someone's asking.
Dre says it's Bush League to ask a question like that. I disagree. I think it's good to get the idea of what a coach is thinking. But at least Harbaugh answered the question and deflected. Like, that's all you got to do. Just deflect it. I'm not thinking about that right now. Okay, no one bats an eye. No one. You made it a bigger deal by walking away than just being, I'm not thinking about that right now. So it's you that magnified it. And I thought that was terrible by him, and it was terrible by Steelers PR to leave that off of the video. Ridiculous. Joe, what are you doing?
I'm going to go back to the Eagles game. I'm going to nominate Matt Patricia. He was the worst offensive coordinator in the NFL last year, and he might have been the worst defensive coordinator in the NFL this year. That guy sucks.
Don't you? I think Dan Quinn would like to have your ear for a quick second.
I mean, Dan Quinn has had one bad game.
That's true.
But Matt Patricia, the Eagles have been terrible, terrible since he took over. I know for some reason Nick Sirianni, I thought that was going to fix anything, but it's amazing that Matt Patricia has been one of the worst coaches in the NFL now on both sides of the ball in back-to-back years.
But honestly, though, one of the backstories that I heard was part of that was, to go back to Jeremy's guy, Sirianni, deserving more blame. He made the move but wouldn't let Patricia like make changes to the defensive staff that he said were necessary to really do what he wanted to do. Now, you can believe that or not believe that, but Matt Patricia has at least had some success in this league, but that defense was too good to be that bad.
Jay Marsh says that Vrabel's overrated. Don't know why everyone's in love with him. I actually agree with that, but he's better than the jabroni Nick Sirianni.
You think he's overrated?
I think he's a little overrated.
Yeah. I think he's done a really good job.
Two and a half years. He's been lousy the last 2.5 years.
A lot of it, too, is if you're, you know, fighting with your general manager over personnel.
Maybe. All right, does it for us. What's winning here? Sirianni, the jabroni?
Yeah. Any association to the Eagles wins.
All right, any association to the Eagles, especially that jabroni, Nick Sirianni. All right, does it for us. Thanks to Joe for the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Brandon. We'll talk to you tomorrow from the Decoy, the bullpen, with Joe George up next on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.